One who has controlled the sitting postures, the yogic asanas, and the breathing process can turn the senses toward the absolute personality of Godhead and thus become immune to the contaminations of the modes of material nature, namely mundane goodness, passion, and ignorance. The preliminary activities of the way of yoga are asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana, dharana, etc. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was to attain success in those preliminary actions because he was seated in a sanctified place and was concentrating upon one objective, namely the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Thus all his senses were being engaged in the service of the Lord. This process directly helps the devotee to get freedom from the contaminations of the three modes of material nature. Even the highest mode, the material mode of goodness, is also a cause of material bondage. And what to speak of the other qualities, namely passion and ignorance. Passion and ignorance increase the material propensities of hankering for material enjoyment. And a strong sense of lust provokes the accumulation of wealth and power. One who has conquered these two base mentalities and has raised himself to the platform of goodness, which is full of knowledge and morality, cannot also control the senses, namely the eyes, the tongue, the nose, the ear, and touch. But one who has surrendered himself unto the lotus feet of Lord Hari, as above mentioned, can transcend all influences of the modes of material nature and be fixed in the service of the Lord. The Bhakti Yoga process, therefore, directly applies the senses to the loving service of the Lord. This prohibits the performer from engaging in material activities. This process of turning the senses from material attachment to the loving transcendental service of the Lord is called pratyahara. And the very process is called pranayama, ultimately ending in samadhi, or absorption in pleasing the Supreme Lord Hari by all means. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So first of all, we'd like to seek the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas who assembled here today to test my knowledge of the Bhagavatam. Prayojana Prabhu, Srinivas Prabhu, Gaura Krishna Prabhu, Sutupa Prabhu, Jagat Priya Mataji, and I'm sure Maharaj is watching online, he always does, and all the other Vaishnavas also. I'd like to seek your blessings so I can say something from the Bhagavatam which you might find useful. Hare Krishna. So, when Prabhupada was around, anything he said would catch on like wildfire. It's very interesting because in those times we didn't have internet. And even then, if Prabhupada said something new in one place, all the centers would immediately know about it very, very quickly. Like, I can't remember which Rath Yatra it was. Was it San Francisco or was it in London when Prabhupada started jumping in the Rath Yatra out of ecstasy? Before that, it was just the Swami step. Prabhupada had shown everybody the Swami step. You put your hands up in the air, one left, one right. So that's what everybody did because that, everyone thought, was the Vaishnava way of dancing. But then one Rath Yatra, Prabhupada started jumping and everyone was, the Swami is jumping. And then it was all over the world that it's okay to jump in kirtan. Before that, it wasn't a done thing. No one used to jump in kirtan. So I just remember that because today it was such an ecstatic kirtan going on and I saw everybody jumping in kirtan. And Prabhupada started that. But just like that, Prabhupada said that in our movement, like for a devotee, there's no need to do any exercise. Just dancing and jumping in kirtan is okay. So that caught on. Okay, dancing and jumping in kirtan is okay. So that's what we do. And then once Prabhupada was giving a talk and he said, you know, to keep your body fit, you can do 10 minutes of yoga. He said, it's okay. And then there was one brahmachari in the audience, and you know, he was a little, say, overweight. And then he asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, but I thought you said dancing and jumping in kirtan is okay and there's no need to do any yoga. And Prabhupada said, no, for you it's okay, because you can do. So yoga, this verse today is all about yoga. And different things are explained, especially about Ashtanga yoga. And it's explained that how Dhritarashtra, after leaving home, he went to the foothills of the Himalayas, and then he started performing Ashtanga yoga by focusing his attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the end, he achieved the highest goal. Okay, so that's explained. Now, Prabhupada explains in the purport something very interesting. He says that, what is yoga? He explains the yoga system. What is the yoga system all about? Okay, what is the purpose of yoga? What is the purpose of yoga? Concentrating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, when Prabhupada said yoga, most often he meant bhakti yoga. Like if you read Prabhupada's translation of the Bhagavad Gita, even wherever Krishna explains different forms of yoga, Prabhupada always says it as bhakti yoga. Because Prabhupada wanted to explain the goal, that, okay, all these things are there, but ultimately our goal is bhakti yoga. That's what it's all about. But some scholars who like to literally translate the Bhagavad Gita, they say Prabhupada's changed the meaning. He goes, here it says karma yoga, here it says this yoga, and they're all different forms of yoga, and Prabhupada's changed it. And how can you say that it's Bhagavad Gita as it is? No, it's Bhagavad Gita as it is, because through all these different processes of yoga, Krishna is telling us that the highest is bhakti yoga, and Prabhupada is just saving us all the trouble. Okay, forget all these different processes, bhakti yoga is the highest. So wherever there's any yoga, Prabhupada mentions bhakti yoga. But the purpose of yoga, as Prabhupada explains in this purport, he says, or in the previous purport, Prabhupada says, this is very interesting. He says, yoga system is the process of learning to forget what we have acquired throughout our struggle for existence. It's very interesting. So, we've been through, since we're all humans, it means that we've been through most other forms of life, if not all, at least a lot of them. And it means that while navigating through these different forms of life, we've acquired different habits and different mentalities that pertain to these different forms of life. As a dog, you may have certain dog experiences, as a donkey, as a pig. You know, in the past, and we've probably been through all these forms, we have certain experiences from these forms. And then within us, I don't know about now, since practicing Krishna consciousness, it may be different, but otherwise within everybody, there is a little bit of dog mentality. There's a little dog within us, there's a little ass within us, there's a little pig within us, because of all these samskaras. Because even though the external body changes, the internal, the subtle body is the same, which is constantly being shaped by different experiences through many, 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 many life forms. So your consciousness as it is today is not just how it started at birth, how psychologists say everything starts from birth and then your childhood frames your consciousness for the rest of your life. But no, Krishna consciousness says our mentality has been shaped since many, many, many births. So we all have a little bit of this mentality from all the different species of life and different things we've been. And in Sanskrit, this is known as a samskara. Samskara. So that's why in the human form of life, also we have certain things called samskaras. Because what we ideally want to do is we want to change those samskaras that we acquired over so many life forms and create new samskaras. Why do we want to do that? Because if we still hold on to our dog samskara, ass samskara, then it means that it's creating an opportunity for us to go back into that same form of life again. But we don't want to do that, because the human form of life is special, so we have to create new samskaras that elevate us. So for this purpose, there's many samskaras, and for this purpose, there is bhakti yoga. But essentially, whatever form of yoga it is, the process of yoga is to undo those things you learned over different forms of life. Okay? And that is very, very important. Now, for example, Prabhupada, if you listen to his lectures, he always talks about people out there, especially materialistic people, being like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. Have you heard any of these lectures? So Prabhupada explains the mentality of an ass. What is the mentality of an ass? Okay? Anyone know? Anyone remember? Yes, Prabhu. Oh, so hardworking. So Prabhupada explains that donkeys are very hardworking, and they're working hard for what? For a little bit of grass, which they can get anyway. But he thinks he has to work really, really, really hard to get a little bit of food. So Prabhupada explains that for a devotee, there's no need to work so hard for the struggle for existence. Krishna provides things to everybody. We should definitely work hard for Krishna, but there's no need to work hard for the struggle for existence. He goes, this is ass mentality. Krishna is providing for everybody. We should do what's necessary, what is the minimum, but we should focus all our endeavors on Krishna consciousness. But if you look out there, everybody is working very, very hard, okay, like an ass. So this is something Prabhupada really highlights. So then another mentality we have is the dog mentality. Okay, what's the dog mentality? Shameless barking. Loyalty. What is that? Loyalty. Loyalty, yes, that's a good part of a dog. What's the other dog mentality? Jagat Priya Mataji had her hand up as well. Barking, yeah. So Prabhupada often explained, he said, you know, immigration people, he said, they're like dogs. It's like when you go to a different country, they're always barking, woof, woof, why are you here? That's the immigration people. So dog mentality is, go away, this is mine, woof, woof. Okay, so that's what a dog does. And if you notice dogs anywhere, you know, they mark their territory by, you know, doing the business on a certain tree or a pole or a patch of grass or a bush or something, because they're saying, this is my territory. And another dog comes into that territory, they're like, go away, this is my spot. Okay, that's dog. This is mine, that's yours. You stay in your spot, I stay in my spot. So that's dog mentality. We don't mark spots like that, but we mark spots with fences and signs. And you get a sign, you know, trespassers will be prosecuted. Or if you're in America, it's trespassers will be shot. So we also like to mark our spot. So this is mine, this is yours. That's dog mentality. Then Anagata, believe it or not, there's also a hog inside us. Okay, the hog within. So what's the hog mentality? Greed? Greed mating? Eaten? Eat everything and anything. Hog mentality is, you give a hog something amazing, it won't eat it, it'll go and find stool to eat. It's always walking around in a filthy place and it loves filthy things. If you give it something good, it won't like it, okay? There's a story Prabhupada explained, that a story that he heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And he talks about how in Burma there was a certain tribe. And once the devotees went there to distribute prasadam, and they used to cook food in pure ghee. And when the smell of ghee went to these people in the tribe, when they came to eat, they'd be like, yuck, what's that smell? And it's like, whoa, this is the smell of fresh ghee, man. What are you talking about? This is cooking the best stuff for you. And what they used to do in that tribe is they used to have this pot in the middle of the village. And anytime anything died, whether it's a dog or a cat or an insect or a bug or whatever, they would chuck it in the pot. And and it would stay in that pot. And then it would rain in the monsoon and it would fill up the pot. And literally over the year, it would just decompose in this whole slurry of dead animal slurry. And then they would have a tap. And then whenever they had a festival, they would open the tap and you're like, they'll drink it. You're like, yeah, this is good stuff, man. So when people like that kind of stuff and you give them food cooked in pure ghee, they look at it and go, oh, what's that? So Prabhupada explains that we have a tendency to enjoy the lowest form of stuff, pleasure, which is sense gratification. That is hog mentality. The dirtiest thing, the thing that's the worst thing, we have a tendency to enjoy that. Everybody loves sense gratification, but we don't have taste for the higher things. Okay? And then the camel. What is the camel mentality? Yes, Antarang Prabhu. Yeah. So the camel likes to eat all these little thorns and stuff in the desert. But what, and he eats the thorns and the leaves, and he thinks, oh, this tastes amazing. But what's actually happening is the thorns are scratching its throat, and he's bleeding, and he's tasting his own blood, and he's thinking, wow, this is good stuff. So we're actually in the material world, we're suffering, but we think we're enjoying. Okay? So all these things create some scars within us, and these are all the mentalities we have carried on from the past. Okay? Even in this life, and we're trying to cultivate them more and more. So the process of yoga is there to help you be free from those mentalities and to create a mentality that will elevate you. Okay? Now the two basic, the basic thing Prabhupada talks about is that in the material world, there are three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And he says, at least the two base modes we should try and overcome, passion and ignorance. And this is the process of yoga. Yoga will help you elevate yourself from the mode of passion and ignorance to the process of goodness. But Prabhupada explains in the purport that even if one comes to the mode of goodness, one cannot be free from the material world unless one surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, yoga as a process can really, really help you elevate yourself from passion and ignorance to the mode of goodness, which is very, very important also. If you think about the six things that are considered vices that we should try and overcome in this material world, what are the six things? Envy is one. Lust. Greed. Pride. Madness. Illusion. So it's lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsara. So these six things. If you look at these six things, three of them are in the mode of passion, and three of them are in the mode of ignorance. So the first three, kam, krodh, lobh, lust, anger, greed, mode of passion. And then madness, illusion, envy are in the mode of ignorance. So if you want to overcome these six things, essentially what you have to do is try and rise to the mode of goodness. And the process of yoga will really help you with that. Now here, Dhritarashtra is performing Ashtanga Yoga. And with Ashtanga Yoga, the main focus, the primary guideline is physical austerity. Ashtanga Yoga means you make external changes in your life so that it will help you frame your inner consciousness. With Bhakti Yoga, what we try and do is we try and change our internals by hearing, chanting, reading, and that way. But external, Ashtanga Yoga, you try and change your externals, okay? Because you may not have a taste so much for these things. So if we have taste for Krishna consciousness, one should definitely read, chant, and everything. But sometimes it is okay to take some help from some other processes, some external things that can help us in our process of Bhakti Yoga. Like, for example, if there is an alcoholic, okay? If an alcoholic is trying to give up his alcohol, there's different processes he can take, okay? He can go to a therapy group and he can speak to people. He can, you know, try and read about the ill effects of alcohol. He can try and start meditation to be focused on something else so he can stay away from alcohol. But at least it'll help if he throws the beer out of his house, okay? So that is Ashtanga Yoga, throw the beer out of the house at least. Okay, it's a mechanical process which if you do, then it'll free you, it'll help you frame your internals. Like they say, isn't it? Out of sight, out of mind. Okay, keep it out of sight and slowly your mind will adapt. So that's the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So for people who don't practice Bhakti Yoga throughout their life, when they come to Vanaprastha stage, which is what Dhritarashtra came to, it is recommended they perform Ashtanga Yoga because they may not have that taste for Bhakti Yoga. So initially you need to learn to rise from the mode of ignorance to passion to goodness and at the same time try and develop some taste for Krishna consciousness. Is that clear so far? So that's the primary thing in Ashtanga Yoga. In Bhakti Yoga, what's the primary guideline? There's a famous verse. Smartavya satatam Vishnur visvartavyo na jatuchit. Sarve vidhi nishedasyur etayoreva kinkaraha. So the primary thing is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Always remember Him and never forget Him. And all the other rules and regulations are servants of this rules and regulations. So that's our rules and regulations in Bhakti Yoga. But in Ashtanga Yoga, it's slightly different. Now, let's just look at a little bit of Ashtanga Yoga and see how it can help us, see what Dhritarashtra may have done. And let me tell you, it's an amazing process. Last year, I went to India and I went to the Govardhan Eco Village, where I did 1 month of yoga teacher training. And let me tell you, that was like the best 1 month of my life. And people will say, oh, this guy's in Maya, you know, he's been living in the ashram, practicing Krishna consciousness. Of course, those are amazing things. And this was amazing in its own way, where we used to get up early. I, you know, 6 o'clock, our yoga would start for about 3 hours. But I had to wake up at four so I could chant my rounds. And then after that, we would take breakfast. Breakfast means no oil, no spices. It's just plain boiled stuff, very, very simple food. No sweets at all for the whole month. Okay, and it is austere, especially when, you know, you go from the manor and there's sweets lying everywhere. And really amazing tasting prasadam. But it was very simple, boiled food, 3 hours of yoga in the morning. After that, you'd have a class and then another class. And then you'd do this yoga, that yoga. No prasadam till 6 o'clock. Once you eat at 9:30, no prasadam till 6. But in between, you'd have another 3-4 hours of yoga. So we're literally doing 6 to 7 hours of yoga a day and studying for about 3 hours and then eating only twice a day, simple stuff, only, you know, no oil, no spices, and no sweets. And then in the evening, we would have satsang and kirtan, and by the time we would finish, it would be 8 o'clock, time to go to bed, so you can wake up at 4. So no time in the day to do absolutely anything, 1 month like that, and I really loved it. I wasn't sure in the beginning. And I used to be like many devotees, I used to be a yoga blasphemer, as they come, you know, yoga, oh, we don't do that stuff. That's not our process. But I did this, and I realized how much it actually helped me. And it helped me remain focused, and really, like, your mind just becomes so purified, and you can actually focus on Krishna consciousness better. So I'm not saying everybody should be a yoga teacher. All I'm saying is everybody, if they take on certain austerity, then it'll help them. So let's look at what these things are that are part of Ashtanga Yoga, and let's see what we can take and help us in our process of Bhakti Yoga. So Ashtanga Yoga means there are 8 stages, okay? The first stage is called Yama, okay? Yama means regulations, okay? Regulations and self-discipline. So before you begin any process of yoga, there has to be regulation and self-discipline. In any form of yoga, even in Bhakti Yoga, we have regulation and discipline. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gaura Nitai Ki Jai. So our regulation and discipline are the 4 principles, okay? This has to come first. Now even in Shastra it is said that when one begins the process of spiritual life, what should he do? He should approach a spiritual master, okay? What is the verse? Tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva bigachet samitpanim shrotriyam brahmanishtham. Samitpanim, he says you should approach the spiritual master with firewood. And you may think, well, why firewood? What's he going to do? Why? Let's learn some philosophy. No, but first you have to learn to serve. First you have to do the austerity before the spiritual master teaches you something. So first you have to live in the Gurukul, you have to live in the house of the Guru and serve the Guru. And for a long time, the students would just serve the Guru. And then the study would start. Anyone watch The Karate Kid? Okay, famous movie. So he's just washing cars and stuff. But along the way, he's learning. It's a whole process. But even if you do karate, even if you do all these Eastern martial arts, the aspect of submitting to the spiritual master and serving him comes first. Okay? Everything begins with yama. Unless you do austerity, you're not going to get anywhere. Okay? So certain type of austerity is necessary. So in Ashtanga Yoga, the process of yama has 5 stages. Well, not 5 stages. There's 5 different types of regulations. Okay? First is non-violence. Anybody know the Sanskrit for that? Ahimsa. non-violence, that's number one. Second regulation, truthfulness. What's that? Satyam, okay? Third is not stealing. What's that? What's the Sanskrit for that? Not stealing? Asteya. Asteya, no stealing. Steal, word steal comes from steya, steal. So asteya means non-stealing. So that's another regulation. Non-violence, truthfulness, not stealing. And fourth is celibacy. What's the Sanskrit? Brahmacharya. Okay? You have to be celibate if you want to practice the process of yoga. Otherwise, your process will be slow. Okay? And then fifth one is no greed, or especially no hoarding stuff. Okay? A brahmana would only accept whatever he needs for the time being. He'll never store things. So one of the processes of Ashtanga Yoga is also no hoarding. So when you go take Vanaprastha in the future, you can't take a cupboard with you into the forest and store all the berries and take rice enough for 3 months. And, you know, it's like you have to go based on fruits and roots, whatever is available at the time. No hoarding. And the Sanskrit for that is aparigraha. Okay? Ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha. These are the 5 stages of yama in Ashtanga Yoga. So it starts with that. Then comes niyama, rules and regulations. Rules. Regulations were those. These are rules. So things you have to do. What are the things you have to do in Ashtanga Yoga? Cleanliness. What's cleanliness? Shaucha. Contentment. Number 2. Tushta or santushta or santosha. Sometimes it is said. So the word here is santosha. Then discipline or austerity. What's the word? Tapa or tapas. Okay. Then number 4 is study. Studying Shastra, spiritual study. What's that? Swadhyaya. And number 5 is surrendering to a higher power. What's the word for that? Ishvara Pranidhan. So 5 things in rules of yoga. Shaucha, Santosha, Tapas, Swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhan. So when one performs the initial austerities of Yama, then one performs Niyama, and then one comes to the 3rd stage of, which is called, anybody know? Gaur Krishna Prabhu is a yoga expert. 3rd stage is asana. Now asana, is very interesting, how asana works, and it's been explained in different ways. Why are all these postures there? Now these postures, actually, let me tell you, they actually came a lot later. If you read the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, no postures are mentioned. And all these postures have only been around since the last 400 years or 500 years. And before that, postures were different. Because Patanjali mentions in his Yoga Sutras, he says, asana means sthira sukham asanam, means you have to learn to adopt a posture that is comfortable for you for the practice of yoga. So the reason, the purpose of asanas is the way, this is how it would work, learning asanas. So you'd perform a posture that's very, very easy, and try and focus your mind and be steady. Once you can do that properly, then you do another posture which is slightly more difficult. And you have to perfect that so you can do the difficult posture with ease. Okay, you should be very, very comfortable performing that posture and focus your mind. Once you've done that, then you do the third posture, fourth posture like that. So you'd start doing more and more difficult postures like that till the most difficult posture you can perform it with as much simplicity and ease as you'd perform Shavasana, which is lying on the ground. So this way, it ensures that doesn't matter any physical state you're in, you won't be disturbed by your body and you'll be able to focus. So that is why asanas are there. That is the purpose of asana. But the essential goal of asana is that you should adopt a posture that you should be really comfortable. Okay, so when one performs this asana, then he comes to the 4th stage, which is called pranayama. Okay, so yama, niyama, asana, pranayama. Now what is pranayama all about? Now, the soul is existing within the body, and the soul is situated in what is called the life airs. And there are many, many life airs, prana, that sustain the body. And pranayama is a process of regulating the life airs. Now, if your life airs are imbalanced, the symptom of that is that your mind will be very much agitated. Okay? Your mind will be very unsteady. It'll be very disturbed. You'll get anxious over little things, depression, thoughts of, you know, anxiety. All these are signs that your prana is out of balance. So there's many ways you can solve this, but pranayama is a interesting process and very effective process that just by mechanically regulating your life airs, you can make your mind steady. In fact, if you read the Pancharatras, and even if you read the Satkriya Sar Dipika, where Gopal Bhatta Goswami explains about different processes for performing puja, pranayama is actually a very important part of it. In the Vedas, it is also said that before doing Gayatri, one should do pranayama to regulate one's mind. Even in many Pancharatra puja processes, before chanting Santan mantras, before doing a yajna, you do pranayama because you should be able to regulate your life affairs and your mind becomes steady so you can do puja properly. So pranayama is a very important process and it regulates the life affairs. Okay? So that's that. Then the fourth stage you'd come to after you studied your body and you studied your mind, the fifth stage is pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawal. Withdrawal of the senses. Ahara. Ahara means to feed. Ahara means eat, isn't it? We use that word ahara for eating. But ahara essentially means anything that goes in through any of the senses. So it could be seeing is also ahara. Eating is also ahara. Hearing. Anything through any of the senses is ahara. And pratyahara means withdraw from all of that. So the idea behind the stage of pratyahara is to withdraw your senses, be totally focused, you've done your niyamas, yamas, your mind is focused now, and now you have to cut out all these different things. It's a bit like switching off your senses so you can focus on what's within you, focus internally. Okay? So it's a slow process like that. Then the sixth stage is called dharana. Anybody know what dharana is? Concentration, definitely. Dharana means concentration. So once you've withdrawn your senses, now you can focus. You can concentrate on one point. And essentially, dharana is preparation for the next stage, which is dhyana. And dharana may be focus or concentration, just developing concentration. You'd concentrate on a certain point. You try and focus your mind. But dhyana specifically refers to concentration on the supersoul in the heart. Okay? So at that stage, because when senses are withdrawn, one goes within and one focuses on the supersoul within. So it is said how Dhritarashtra also did this. He adopted the process of Ashtanga Yoga. He used to take bath 3 times a day, all these different things. And then he came to this stage where he was focusing on the Paramatma. And this is what all the yogis are trying to do. They're mechanically trying to get rid of all these other imbalances in their life so they can come to this stage and focus on the supersoul within. And then when you focus on the supersoul within, you get to the final stage, which is called samadhi. Okay? And samadhi is a perfection of that focus when you see the supersoul. Now, does anyone know what the word samadhi mean? Absorption. Equal. Yeah, you said equal. Sama means equal and dhi means to see. Samadhi means see everything equally. And that's why that verse is there in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains that an intelligent man sees everybody equally. Okay, why does he see everybody equally? Because just in the previous state, he's been able to focus on the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the heart, and he has Paramatma realization in the previous stage where he realizes that this Paramatma is within everybody. And so at the stage of Samadhi, he's able to see everybody equally and he achieves self-realization. So this is the stage of Ashtanga Yoga. Very interesting, isn't it? And we can all take certain aspects from it. What you want to take, I'll leave it to you. But all these different aspects are there. Asana, pranayama, I definitely recommend. 10 minutes a day, if you want. And it's very, very useful. Now, when one performs this process, one can elevate himself to the mode of goodness. Sobari Muni, for example, he did this process. Okay, he performed it and for thousands of years he was situated in that state of trance. But then he got distracted. So that is a sort of downside to the Ashtanga Yoga process. If you just do Ashtanga Yoga, that you can be distracted. because it's a mechanical process. So before you come to the stage of perfection, fall down may happen anytime, like it happened with Sobri Muni. Now, once you come to the mode of goodness, it is said that one should focus all one's senses on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if you perfect everything else, unless you're able to do this, you won't be able to get out of the clutches of the mode of goodness. You can escape the clutches of passion and ignorance, or pignorance, but you won't be able to escape the clutches of goodness unless you focus your senses on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. So one should engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses. So this is explained. Now the bhaktas or the devotees are one notch over all the other yogis, because whatever one can do by performing Ashtanga Yoga for thousands and thousands and millions of years, one can achieve easily by the process of Bhakti Yoga. But the processes of Ashtanga Yoga can help one in Bhakti Yoga. So one should not reject all these other things that can help, but one should always understand that our primary focus is Krishna and focusing on Krishna. There is a very interesting verse in the Padyavali, and it explains Sandranandam anantam avyayam ajamyad yogino pikshanam sakshatkartum upasate pratidinam dhyanaikatana param danyasta vrajavasinam yuvatayastad brahmaya kautukad alinganti samalapanti shatada karshanti chumbandicha. So it's explaining how ajam yogino pikshanam, yogino, all the yogis, okay? Just to get a one moment darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within their heart, okay? Shanam, just for one moment, what are they doing? Sakshat kartum upasate pratidinam dhyanaikatana param, okay? Sakshat, constantly, kartum upasate, they're worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pratidinam, every day, constantly, okay? For thousands and thousands of years, by what single-pointed focus on the Lord within the heart, okay? They're trying to focus single-pointedly within by performing so much austerity for hundreds and thousands of years just to get one moment's darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then it explains, Danyastavrajvasinam yuvatayastad brahmaya kautukad. Danyastavrajvasinam, the gopis of Vrindavan, are so glorious because that same Supreme Brahman that the yogis are trying to conquer just for one second by performing millions of years of austerity, they happily spoke with him, laughed with him, joked with him, embraced him and kissed him. This is the glory of the process of Bhakti Yoga, that by so much ease, they were doing so much more than what the yogis could do just for getting a little glance. So Bhakti Yoga is a powerful process, but this is the process of Ashtanga Yoga. If you don't have taste, especially, it's good to take on some of these things. And they definitely help us cut out all external influences so we can develop some taste for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Any questions? Antaranga Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, very nice class, very technical. One question is that we know from the commentaries by the Acharyas that Dhritarashtra, he actually achieved Brahman realization.
And Dhritarashtra achieved what?
Brahman
realization.
He didn't reach the darshan of Paramatma in the heart.
Yeah.
And that was due to the offenses to the Pandavas.
Yeah.
So my question is, when he was practicing Ashtanga Yoga, which the goal is samadhi, to have darshan of the Supreme,
yeah,
how is that possible that his goal was, you know, Brahman realization? So it's just like, let's say you will go for bhakti, which is, you know, we want to know Krishna.
Yeah.
But then you achieve Paramatma realization.
Yeah.
So it's like stepping down, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdete.
Yeah. Thank you. So the thing is, you'll never achieve a realization that you don't want to achieve. Okay? It'll never happen that you really sincerely desire Krishna and then Krishna will give you Brahman realization, or Krishna will send you to the Brahma Jyoti. Because Krishna always reciprocates with the desires of the devotee. If your practice of yoga is aimless, then you'll get the fruit of the yoga that is determined by the process of yoga. Like Dhritarashtra, for example, I don't think he was desiring to go and serve Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. That wasn't his desire. His desire was sort of attained by the mercy of Vidura, who came to his house and literally kicked him out, in one sense. He told him, get out of here, you're just hanging around. And Dhritarashtra didn't have any desire to, you know, go back to Godhead or serve Krishna or become Krishna's personal servant or whatever, become a gopi or whatever. So he got out because he thought it was the right thing to do, to escape, to get out of family life because he's of a certain age. And that's why he practiced Ashtanga Yoga and not Bhakti Yoga. And that's why when he left his body, even though he was focusing on the Paramatma within, which is the process of Bhakti Yoga, which is the process of Ashtanga Yoga, that's why he achieved Brahman realization. Does that answer? But if you want to achieve Krishna realization and go back to the spiritual world, then Krishna is not going to say that, no, you only made it this far, you haven't made it all the way, so I'm going to give you Brahman realization instead. What Krishna would rather do, he'll give you put you in a situation in your next life so you can practice more and achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, fulfill your desire. That's what Krishna does. And if you want proof of this, you can read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in which Gopakumar is explained, and he's explaining this to another Brahmana who's got this mantra. And Gopakumar is a boy from Govardhan Hill, and his goal is Krishna. Okay, he wants to be a cowherd boy worshipping Krishna. And he has this mantra and he's going through all these different stages. He's going to the heavenly planets. He's gone to Vaikuntha. He's seen Narayan. He's been to Dwarka, Lord Ram. But he's just not satisfied, even though everything's there, because he wants to be with Krishna in the spiritual world like that, in that relationship as a cowherd boy. So at the end, Krishna will give you what you desire. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Thank you. Process of Bhakti Yoga ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.